Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into the latest Behind the Bets podcast. I am Doug Kazarian. We are taping this a little earlier than normal on Tuesday, March 19th, because it is that time of the year. March Madness is alive and well. The NCAA tournament has arrived. Play-in games tonight. But obviously the dance really starts in the first round on Thursday, so we wanted to give everyone an extra day to absorb all of our great insight. Kai, are you ready for your bracket?
I'm ready, man. Well, I'm still kind of finalizing some things, but I'm ready to see the games, period, man. Especially, I had a conversation with my mom this morning. You know, we're Rutgers fans, but she's a Benedict Arnold now with the Seton Hall support she's been showing, which
Who
is cool.
This, I'm sorry?
My mom.
Oh, okay. So a little tension right there.
Yeah, but you know what? I can't be too mad about it.
Nah. It's understandable. So any crazy predictions like, you know, when you had Rutgers beating Michigan?
I really don't, man. I'm interested to see what's going to happen. I know a lot of people are saying that Duke may not get to the Final Four like it's, you know, preordained. A lot of people have some wild takes, but I have no idea. I'm just excited, just like everybody else, to see what's going to happen.
No, it's great. And coming up, we have John Murray, Mr. Director, to shed some light on action from behind the counter. So we'll have him, and then Matt Eumanns, friend of the program we've had, and also on Daily Wager. What do you think of TV star Matt Eumanns?
Yeah, man. It's like I said earlier, it's good to see put some faces to these names, man, and these voices.
Yeah, no, it's been a fun start to the Daily Wager. Six shows in, I should say, and we're up and running. I love Kenny Mayne had a cameo at the end of the show last time, and at the end he goes, "You realize you've been talking gambling for an hour? Are you allowed to do that?" And just really shining a bright light.
How the times are changing.
On the novelty of it all. Right. Okay, man. Well, let's get to it. First we have Mr. Director, then we have Matt Eumanns.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
A whole lot happened in between, and we continue to roll on here on the Behind the Bets podcast. Mr. Director, how are you?
I'm good, man. I think we should start by talking about the Mike Trout contract, because last time I was on this show, I talked about how the Angels should trade him. Looks like they went in the exact opposite direction, huh?
Yeah. Is there a no-trade clause, or are they going to flip him? Is it like buying a house? Are they just going to flip it after they acquire him, like much like OBJ?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think only David Gettleman would do something like that. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's funny that Bryce Harper's deal now, his deal, I mean, it's hard to criticize a guy that just signed a contract for $330 million guaranteed, but Machado got $10, $300 to live in San Diego, and now Trout gets $12, $430 to live in Orange County. I know where I would rather be.
Would you rather be in Orange County? Because I know you're a big San Diego guy.
Well, I mean, I would rather be in Orange County or San Diego than in Philadelphia.
Oh, I got you. I got you.
But
I
was gonna say, it's almost like Scott Boras just wanted Bryce Harper to set the all-time total value record, because I don't think it's a coincidence that they went $5 million over Stanton's contract with the Yankees, and in return he signed for 13 years and there's no opt-out in his contract, and he didn't even get to spring training before somebody else blew away his record. So.
Yeah, it is like weird said, that Trout was so, excuse weird. Me, Harper was so intent on a long-term deal, other teams do not, like the Dodgers reportedly.
I know, and I feel like the Dodgers deal, which I heard was 4 years, 168, and would have had him hitting free agency again at age 30. I mean, unless he suffered just a catastrophic injury in the next 4 years, you'd have to think there'd be a big market for him at age 30, when you would think the baseball payrolls will just naturally grow up in the next 4 years. I don't know. Like I said, you can't really criticize a guy that signed a $330 million contract, but I do think Bryce could have done better, and good deal for the Phillies, I think.
Well, it just depends how you balance quality of life, choices, options,
right,
versus an extra. I mean, at some point, there's a saturation point. It's like why I always supported Steph Curry taking the money, because when they won the title, I think he was like the seventh highest paid player on the Warriors. But he got so much money that at some point, that security matters more than the potential of being like FU money.
No, I agree. I mean, and the quality of life, I'm not here to like badmouth Philadelphia. I think Philadelphia's a fine city. I was just there last week. But I've been to all three of those places, and I'd rather be in San Diego or Orange County.
Well, for me, it's just opportunity and choices. It's not so much one city over the other, because he may love Philly, right?
Right?
All right, but man, let's talk. There's a big basketball tournament going on. Have you heard about it?
Really? Yes. I spent all day yesterday with Ed Sammons doing the college basketball tournament prop numbers. It was a huge undertaking here at the Superbook, but we got it all done.
So those are like total number of ACC wins, total, you know, and then just like the fun props, basically.
Yeah, they're fun, but we get a lot of wise guy action on them, too. So there's a lot of the public action on them will probably come later. We're taping this on Tuesday morning. Usually the public starts getting to town tomorrow afternoon, tomorrow evening.
What has been the sharp action so far?
So far, one that we took a lot of money on was over 6.5 wins by the number 3 seeds. We took a handful of bets on that. It went up from minus 135 all the way up to minus 195. Ed and myself are both very down on LSU, and they are a 3 seed, of course. So we might have opened it a little bit low, but you know, LSU is just not the same team without Will Wade as their coach.
And I hate Purdue. So
yeah, both teams, both LSU and Purdue, were very down on the coaches both ways there.
Right.
So Tony Benford is just not qualified to be coaching a program like LSU. He did a terrible job at North Texas. He was their coach there for, I think, 4 or 5 seasons. And I don't think it's a coincidence that they went out in the first game of the SEC tournament as the 1 seed. He's in way over his head here.
Well, they obviously have distractions there. We've talked about Purdue enough in terms of just fading them. But it's interesting, Texas Tech, I know a lot of sharps like them, given that they are the number 1 rated team in terms of defensive efficiency. So that's interesting in that regard. And then Houston, a lot of people are probably not recognizing the brand name and picking them to go down early.
Yeah, and Texas Tech, that would be the exact opposite of what I just said about Purdue and LSU. We love Chris Beard. We think he's a great coach. But Texas Tech, they got a pretty tough draw to play the winner of Buffalo or Arizona State, St. John's. And then theoretically they'd play Michigan in the Sweet 16 before a date with Gonzaga in the regional final. So it's not exactly an easy road for them. And Houston could really have their hands full in the second round if they play Iowa State. I wouldn't be surprised if Iowa State was favored in that game.
Yeah, if the Cyclones get past Ohio State.
Sure, if they get past Ohio State. But I don't think it would be crazy to think that game maybe be like a pick 'em, maybe Iowa State won. I don't think that's unrealistic at all. So some tough roads for a few of these 3 seeds and just 2 coaches that we don't think much of in Painter and Benford.
Okay, so the sharps have weighed in there. Where else?
Over ACC wins, over 15. We opened that over 15 minus 110. We're all the way up to minus 180. Obviously, the ACC with 3 number 1 seeds. Never seen a number this high on any of the conferences for a conference that only has 7 teams in the field. But when you have 3 number 1 seeds, and Virginia and Duke both look like they have very favorable draws for sure. So it makes sense that there'd be some money there. But it's no small task to get all the way to 16 wins.
You think Duke's draw is that favorable?
I think Virginia Tech is a tricky game for them.
Oh, absolutely.
In the Sweet 16, there's no doubt about that.
That's what I'm thinking, especially with Justin Robinson returning.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I wouldn't say it's easy. I think Virginia actually got the best draw of the 4-1 seeds, personally.
Agreed.
But I do think that Duke should be able to get to the Final Four. I don't love Michigan State. I wouldn't be surprised to see Michigan State get knocked off before they get to a potential game against Duke. But Buzz Williams is one of my favorite coaches in the country, and definitely that could be a very dangerous game for the Blue Devils in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, I'm not sure Sparty gets out of the second round. Like, I think Louisville can definitely be capable of beating them.
Yeah, I've got a bracket in front of me that I filled out. The only bracket I fill out is for my sister's office pool. I send her a bracket, and I actually picked Louisville over Michigan State for her. So I agree.
She's a newlywed now. She doesn't have someone else to, yeah. You know, she doesn't have.
She makes me do it. Okay. She makes me do it.
What I do is
I go very chalky with it, DK, because I figure that way I can't make too many big mistakes. You know, if I pick like a 5 seed to get to the final or something, I feel like I'm going to get a text. Like, what are you doing? So I keep it very chalky just to play it on the safe side. You can't go too wrong when you do that.
Gotcha. Who's your pick to win it all?
Virginia. I think, like I said earlier, I think Virginia's got a very favorable draw. And this is the best team they've had under Tony Bennett. And really, if they don't get it done this year, there's just no excuse. Because I don't see how they don't get at least to the Elite Eight. And they really should. They'd be a decent-sized favorite against Tennessee or Purdue, or I guess theoretically Villanova could be there. But I really think that this thing sets up very well for Virginia. And consider Duke and Gonzaga are both on the other side of the bracket for a potential Final Four matchup. Virginia really did very well on Selection Sunday.
Yeah, no, it's almost like the Toronto Raptors. If they don't do it this time, then they got to blow it up, right? Like,
no, I agree.
All the
I
stars
agree.
Need to point. Okay, so what are some other sharp action you got?
Another player that I really respect bet Villanova to not make it to the Sweet 16. He laid minus 200. We went to minus 250. And we have seen some sharp money on St. Mary's in that first round game. Saw some sharp groups take 5.5 on the Gales against Villanova, which we thought was interesting.
Interesting. What else?
Yeah. More prop bets or more
everything. Just feed our listeners.
Anything you want. We took some money on LSU to make the Sweet 16 at plus 130, but that was intentionally done by us, as you can imagine. Also, Kansas to make it to the Sweet 16. We took a bet at plus 170. We don't like Kansas either, man. Kansas way down this year, and we've seen some sharp players actually take UC Irvine in that first round matchup with the Jayhawks.
I think Kansas is facing Northeastern.
Did I say? Oh, I was thinking Kansas State. Well, those are both true. We've seen sharp money on UC Irvine and Northeastern, but I did mean Northeastern. Excuse me. We've seen some sharp money on Northeastern. We've also seen some sharp money on UC Irvine, but I'm jumping around too much. How about this one? ACC to win the tournament. We opened at yes, minus 110. We're all the way up to yes, minus 150.
Wow.
On will an ACC team win the national championship.
And that's sharp money.
That's sharp money, yeah. I mean, these guys that are betting these things on Monday night right when we open them for limit-size bets,
right.
It's just like when we get the Super Bowl props turned on that Thursday night. It's almost exclusively sharp money until we get closer to the tournament.
Now, that Thursday night with the Super Bowl props, there's a lot of sort of arbitraging and middling. With some of these,
yeah.
With these props, you're not. There's no arby.
Yeah, when we opened these yesterday afternoon, really there were a lot of these props that we had up, not all of them, but a lot of them, we were the only place in the world to have them. So these are guys that aren't just scalping and middling. These are guys that are actually taking an opinion and gambling against us, which I think is a lot more interesting than just guys saying that we'll take a scalp from your book to another book in Nevada.
Gotcha. It's funny. I'm on KU in that game.
I apologize for jumping around because I wanted to, making a mistake there. I wanted to just jump through the props and then go to the game stuff to keep it a little cleaner.
Yeah.
So I'll give you another prop one. Texas Tech plus 130 against Michigan. This is on who will advance further in the tournament. And I think Michigan really could have a tricky game in the second round, whether it's Nevada or Florida that advances out of that first round game. Michigan could have their hands full. If you remember, Michigan, very fortunate to survive the second round last year against Houston. Miracle shot at the buzzer to win that
game. Yeah, I believe it was Jordan Poole who hit that miracle shot.
Yeah.
And then after that, sort of, you know, Michigan went on. It reminded me of sort of Florida back when I was in college. Mike Miller had a buzzer beater and they escaped. I think it was the second round, Lon Kruger, and then they went on the Final Four.
That might have been the first round that Mike.
The first round
shot.
Was it? Yeah.
And then I think they beat. I want to say Butler in the first round. Is that right? It's a long time ago. But
yeah,
then they ended up getting to the. Then they ended up going all the way to the title game. I know they lost to Michigan State in that title game. I remember that one. But how about this one?
That's the lone time I've ever won a office pool or a March Madness pool.
Really? My only one that I ever won was the next year, 2001. The stars aligned, and I picked the whole Final Four and the title game and the winner.
Oof.
Duke really went on a limb with that Duke pick. They beat Arizona in the title game. And I was in four pools, and I won them all. And since then, I've won zero pools. That was
and you've actually gained more knowledge since. By
oh, yeah, yeah. Something like that. Yeah, but that was only 18 years ago. I always remember that, and I like to brag about it whenever I can, obviously.
What other props?
This one here, Florida State. Florida State plus 110 to win more games than Virginia Tech. That's now minus 110. Like I said earlier, I like Virginia Tech. I don't love Florida State. And we've actually seen some sharp money come in on Vermont against the Seminoles in that first round game.
Hmm. Yeah, Seminoles are playing what? Vermont? Cat.
Yeah. How about this one I thought was interesting? A guy that I definitely respect bet Gonzaga at 6-1 to win it all shortly after the brackets came out. It was sometime on Sunday night. And there's been a fair support for the Zags. We're down to 9-2 on Gonzaga. We now actually lose a small amount on Gonzaga, nothing significant.
What's your liability overall? Like, who's the danger zone?
Of the teams that can actually win, Texas Tech is well, you got to look at it realistically. Like, I can tell you that we would take a huge loss on Syracuse. People always bet Syracuse. I feel like we had this conversation last year.
You have a betting kiosk at ESPN that I don't know about?
We would love to have one there, but no.
The media world is all about Syracuse here. Well, everybody's in the area.
Syracuse has a top journalism school, right? That doesn't surprise me.
Right.
Syracuse is always a liability every year in this tournament, and they're a liability again this year. But I don't really see them as a team that could realistically win. Of teams that could realistically win, Texas Tech, I guess Virginia Tech could realistically win the tournament. We would lose on them. Yeah, we would lose on Gonzaga, but that's a small amount, and we would take a very small loss on North Carolina. But right now, Duke is a decent-sized winner for us. Kentucky is a very good winner for us. Virginia is a great win for us, so we'd like to see the Cavaliers go all the way.
Until some house player makes a huge bet on the final
right. Four. Right, and that's an excellent point. I mean, we'll probably write a good percentage of what we'll overall write in this pool here just in the next couple of weeks. So much of the money hasn't come in yet, and a lot of it's going to show up here in the next few days and will continue to show up between now and the Final Four.
What other sharp action?
Sharp action on the props. Let me see what else I can get you guys here. There was a lot of it last night. How about total number one seeds to reach the Final Four?
Would you make it 1.5?
One with the under favored, and we had three guys actually bet us the over last night. We had a hard time getting to 2 on that one when we were doing the numbers yesterday afternoon.
I'd be shocked if 0 hits.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, the one seeds are pretty strong this year. We like the one seeds over like this year a lot more than we did last year, because I know last year we were very down on Xavier. They were one of the one seeds. We were very down on Kansas. Now they ended up going to the Final Four, but we didn't like them at all. We think the one seeds in general are a lot stronger. That two seed prop bet will almost definitely end up being a push, I think.
So, wait, you were just saying the total number of one seeds to reach the Final Four was you opened it at 1.
Two seeds.
I'm sorry.
If I said one seeds, I apologize.
Okay.
Two seeds. Two.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think the one seed. I thought that's why I said 1.5. I was like, would you make the one seeds 1.5?
We did make the one seeds. The one seeds are 1.5 over minus 190.
That makes sense. Okay. I think we're both on the same page. One of us misspoke or misheard. It doesn't matter.
I might have misspoke.
So, yeah, I think it's awesome. A chalky tournament. It is interesting because Duke is the highest favorite at plus $2, plus $225-ish. The biggest favorite going into the tournament since that 2015 undefeated Kentucky team was plus 110. And they lost in the Final Four to Wisconsin, Frank Kaminsky and everything, and then Whiskey lost to Duke in the championship game. But I will say the favorite has won each of the last 2 years, Villanova and Carolina. But it's also just hard to, there's just value not like fading Duke. Do you have a yes-no prop yet on Duke?
We don't have a yes-no on Duke. I know that I've seen that around town. My guess would be that books probably are doing that because they've got liability to Duke. And they're trying to get some of it off the way we did the same thing last year with the Vegas Golden Knights. But we don't have that exact prop up.
Yeah, I just think it's a top heavy. But all four two seeds are all double digits in terms of long shot odds. So at least 10-1. I believe the lowest is, 12-1? And that hasn't happened in the last 5 years.
that a two seed won it all?
No, that all the two seeds were double-digit odds going into the tournament. Usually it's like 8-1 or something like that.
Usually one of the two seeds is the favorite in their region. I'm pretty sure last year Duke was the favorite in their region with number one seed Kansas. And then Kansas, of course, beat them. So, but I think Duke, I'm pretty sure Duke was favored in that.
It's going to be fascinating because it's just mind-boggling that Duke doesn't have better shooters, right? It's just for Duke over the years, the talent, why they have no one who can make a three for the most part. And I forget, I've mentioned on the pod, but I forget the stat. It's like the last 30 champions never have shot as poorly as Duke shoots from three going into the tournament percentage-wise. So, but they have three top picks, including Zion Williamson, and they play good defense, so they can certainly offset that. But it's going to be interesting in the format that we, you know, that is March Madness, is if that it bites them one game.
Yeah, and if you can't hit, if you're not knocking down your outside shots, you can certainly let another team hang around, and a very well coached team like Virginia Tech could be a threat to them. I don't know who else, and I don't really see Michigan State as being able to beat Duke, to tell you the truth.
Yeah,
and I don't like LSU at all. Obviously, Louisville, the 7 seed in that region, is another extremely well coached team, but I don't think Chris Mack has the players to get quite that far. Not this season, at least.
Well, they led Duke by 20, or is that was the game that Zion got poked in the eye, I believe, and left.
Yeah, I think so. That was I remember that game very well. So they're an extremely well-coached team. I don't know that they have the talent level to beat Duke on a neutral.
Any other? Okay, let's get into the games that you've taken some sharp eyes on.
We can do the game stuff. I know.
Yes, you mentioned Northeastern, UC Irvine.
Yeah, Northeastern +8.5 and +8 against Kansas. And UC Irvine +5.5 against Kansas State. Did I say it right that time?
Yeah, Northeastern's playing KU. I like KU in that game, actually.
Yeah, that one's come down quite a bit. St. Mary's +5.5. I know I already mentioned that. They're playing Villanova in a 6-11 game. Vermont +11. Mm. Definitely seen some sharp money there. Central Florida, we had guys taking +1 and Pick'em against VCU. Now, Central Florida is now favored in that game. Liberty +7 in one of those tricky 12-5 games. They play Mississippi State. Virginia Tech, 9.5-point favorite over St. Louis, now 10.5-point favorite. Sharp Group's laying the 9.5. And if you like a big dog, Iona +25 against North Carolina. So a Sharp Group take that one.
Wow. Carolina might put up 100.
Yeah, but it's always fun to fade country Roy Williams, isn't it? I mean, that play he drew up at the end of the ACC semifinal against Duke was amazing, huh? He only had 12 seconds to come up with something, and that was the shot they came up with.
Yeah, a lot of this late-game execution has been shaky across all college hoops. And then the refereeing, not calling the foul in the SEC semis.
Yeah, that was
Florida
terrible.
Florida and Auburn. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. And then the Michigan State game, they were, like, trying to foul, and they didn't call it.
Yeah, it's funny, probably the greatest shot that North Carolina's made in the last few years, nobody will remember it, of course, was the Marcus Page three-pointer to tie the championship game against Villanova. Another play where Country Roy had nothing designed and just chucked up a miracle double-clutch three. The kid made it. But, you know, I don't think much of Roy Williams, let me just say that.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I mean, how about that gig, getting to coach just Kansas and Carolina your entire career?
Yeah, and some of the rosters he had at Kansas were absolutely loaded. And certainly his first two North Carolina championship teams were both just loaded with future NBA players. He certainly had some good gigs in this line of work.
What other single-game matchups?
Really, that's it for the sharper stuff on the first round matchups. I'm sure there will be more as we get a little bit closer to Thursday, but that's pretty much all I have. You know, building off of that UCF-VCU game I just mentioned, we've had guys going under on wins for that conference, the A-10.
Hmm.
Under a half A-10 win. So seems like our guys don't like VCU or in the first round against Central Florida. Tough matchup for the winner of that game against Duke in the second round.
Oh. Yeah, Duke's walking to the third round. They're walking to the Sweet 16.
You would think, but I know they did lose, 2 years ago? They lost to South Carolina in the second round?
They weren't this team.
No, they weren't, but they had a good team. They had Jason Tatum on that team, future NBA star. Not as talented as this current.
He was banged up, though, wasn't he?
Yeah, and that was a Duke team, too, that I think they went six deep. They played almost nobody off the bench, so all their starters were playing, like, the whole way. And I seem to remember Grayson Allen just chucking up, like, 30 shots in that game.
That team. I'm so glad to see them eliminated. But, yeah, you're right. South Carolina, they had some junkyard mentality on that team.
Yeah. They got Thornwell to the Final Four.
Yeah, Thornwell was great.
Darius Thornwell, yeah.
Still in the NBA. So, all right, man, anything else? It was abbreviated Mr. Director hit.
Yeah, I mean, we're still relatively early in the week. I could maybe touch on a few of the region bets if you'd like.
Sure.
Let me just pull that up. I know we've taken a good amount of money on Tennessee to win the South region against Virginia. I like Virginia in that region, obviously. Certainly Duke, a very popular bet to win the East region. Guys laying minus 160. That pushes up to minus 170 there. You want some longer shots. It's funny, a lot of people are betting on Bradley. I guess they think that's this year's Loyola Chicago. But they've got a pretty tough draw with Michigan State and then the winner of Louisville, Minnesota. So I don't know how dangerous they really are. Let me see what else. St. Mary's to win their region. We've taken a few bets on that. And then in the Midwest, Kentucky has been a popular play in the Midwest. Guys taking 3-1. We're now down to plus 275.
Interesting. All right, dude, that's about all I got.
Yeah, that's all I got. Getting ready for another fun March Madness. The first 2 days are a lot of fun. If you're coming out here, make sure you get a phone account. I don't care if you're betting here or anywhere else. You don't want to wait in line all weekend, man.
Yeah? Yeah, no, please don't. Well, you have betting kiosks established all throughout, and a lot of places do. But
yeah, we'll have satellite windows in the theater, the International Theater, but I just, for the life of me, I don't understand why anybody wouldn't bet on a phone account. It's just so much easier, and it'll make your whole weekend more comfortable. If you're like me, you want to be moving around during the weekend, not necessarily just sitting in one place, and this way you can just make your bets on the fly.
Kai wants to know about Seton Hall.
Seton Hall, yeah, what does he think?
I mean, I know it's a long shot, but
you're talking about to win it. I thought you meant to their first round game.
Yeah, no, not to win it all. No, in the first round game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Seth Greenberg gave me some hope.
Yeah, I kind of like Seton Hall in that game. I'm a big fan of Kevin Willard, and he had them playing well at the end of the season. They had a run to the Big Ten or the Big East, championship game. Did see some sharp money come in at +3 on that game. Now Seton Hall +2.5 against Wofford. I think Wofford and Belmont are going to be very popular public plays this week.
Oh, everyone's talking about Wofford.
Yeah, and Belmont, too. I think the Belmont plays in the first four on, I think that's tonight, actually, against Temple. So Wofford and Belmont, if you're looking to fade the public, I think you're going to see both of those teams getting a lot of play.
All right, dude. Thank you, as always, Mr. Director. And let's do it again soon.
All right. Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Kicking is for losers.
Let's now go back out to Las Vegas and bring in our friend of the program, Vegas Stats and Information Network's Matt Humans. Matt, how are you, man?
Doing great. It's March Madness. Busy as hell this week, but that's a good thing.
Exciting time of year. You are a TV star now for ESPN and also a star out in Las Vegas, especially with college basketball. Picked a bunch of winners on the show Friday. Nice bounce back. Way to end the week last week, and let's fire on some more games here. You and I both on Arizona State here in this play-in game, let's call it. Why do you like the Sun Devils?
You know, first of all, Doug, I'll say you said nice bounce back. The downside of a bounce back means you're coming back from a losing day. But, yeah, it's always positive to finish the week with the winner. I like Arizona State here. I was at the Pac-12 tournament at T-Mobile Arena on the Strip over the weekend, and I liked Arizona State a little bit better when I watched this team up close. And I don't like much of anything I've seen from St. John's at this point. The Johnnies 1-5 in their past 1-4 in their past five games, off a 32-point loss to Marquette, and this team has been Mattingly inconsistent. It's just you don't know what you're going to get from St. John's game in to game out. Arizona State was in this first four a year ago, lost to Syracuse 60-56. So Sun Devils head back to Dayton to face another New York team. I think the key is going to be Remy Martin. He's the point guard for Arizona State. He left that game against Oregon with a groin injury, and when he left the floor, Arizona State had a lot of problems offensively. Sun Devils opened that second half with an 18-3 run. Martin's absence on the floor was obviously a problem. Bobby Hurley said that he is close to 100%, and he is going to go. So with him expected to go, I did lay one with Arizona State. It's going to be Shamori Pons and his show for St. John's. 19.5 points, 5.2 assists. He's basically a dynamic playmaker. He can take over a game. But I'll tell you what, Bobby Hurley, for all his complaining, and he is the number one complainer in college basketball. I don't know if you saw this last month, Doug, but there was a play in an Arizona State game where a player threw a pass out of bounds and it hit Hurley in the face and knocked him down. And he jumped up and started screaming at the ref. That's just what Bobby Hurley does. He just screams at the ref from start to finish. He's all over the refs the entire game. Chris Mullin's quite the opposite. He's sometimes it looks like he doesn't give a damn on the sideline. I always like Mullin, but I tell you what, he's more of a roll the ball out there and let him play coach. If you watch the St. John's offense, it's just high ball screens and dribble drives. It's kind of a playground style of game. I think Arizona State's a better coach team. I'm going to go with the Sun Devils here, laying the point. And the tipping point for me was that Remy Martin is going to play in that game. That's kind of what I was holding off to find out.
Gotcha. Another game you and I are both on, and look, you got me onto this Purdue train about a month ago, or fading Purdue train. And I wish it was a better team. I wish it wasn't. I'd take fewer points with a better team.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll still take the 13 with Old Dominion here against a Purdue squad, and that I just can't stand watching Carson Edwards shoot.
You and a lot of other people. Carson Edwards is a high-volume shooter. I think he's taken more shots than anybody in the NCAA tournament, and he's missed a ton of those shots. You know, the analytics cappers love Purdue. But one thing I'll say about analytics at this point in the season, I look at it, I use it, but that's not my emphasis when I'm handicapping games, because I think a lot of those numbers can be deceiving. You know, some of the better performances the team had in December, January, early February are baked into those numbers. And I think you have to pay more attention to how a team has played recently. And really the truth is Purdue has not been very good since early February, especially Carson Edwards. He's been in a shooting slump since around Super Bowl weekend. Purdue is 4-7 against the spread in its past 11, a sign that's an overvalued team. Edwards is 7-33, 21% from three in the past three games. If you want to go back to early February, the numbers are not much better. I think Purdue's a fading and overrated team. I said this last week on your Daily Wager show that Purdue was overvalued. I made the Lions 6.5 against Minnesota. It closed 10 or 10.5. And the Gophers won that game. That's a mediocre Minnesota team. I'll say this. I agree what you implied about Old Dominion not being very good. But what I like about the Monarchs, they're seventh in the nation in scoring defense, allow about 61 points a game. They have a 6'5 senior guard, B.J. Stith, who is going to be a little bit of a matchup problem, I think, for Purdue. He's shooting it better than Edwards. And I think the Monarchs are going to try to slow the pace, make this an ugly game. I took 13 with Old Dominion, and, you know, with a lot of these underdog plays in the tournament, Doug, I'll probably split the unit, play half on the first half, half for the game, but I have played Old Dominion plus 13 for the game already.
Yeah, the tournament's always fascinating. I always feel like these teams get so tight, right? Like, if the games were played on a neutral court in January, February, there would be no tightness, but just the magnitude of the tournament and then the crowd, right? You have handful of teams' fan bases represented in the arena, and let's say fan bases that are playing later in the pod or whatever you want to call it, they start rooting for the underdog. And so the crowd gets on the support of the underdog in all these situations. The only one rooting for the favorite is the team that's fan base is on that, right? But all the other ones are trying to rally the underdog, and I think the refereeing gets shaky with that crowd, and I just think the tightness. You have these 8-point games with 3.5 to go that are in the regular season is a double-digit win, but they become two-point games or four-point games with a minute to go?
Well, it can be. I mean, it's fascinating to me, and I've tried to study this over the past year because I was losing too many underdog bets, you know, in games where I had a halftime lead or it was definitely a winning bet at the half, and you end up losing the bet, and you're, you know, you're ticked off, and you think, all right, how can I fix this? Well, I think you can fix it by reducing the volatility and betting half in the first half, half on the game, and that's actually worked out pretty well for me the past couple months, doing it that way. Now, I do recall a tournament game last year where I played South Dakota State, and I did not do it that way. I just played it for the game. I think it was +8. And it was a winner at the half. Ohio State pulled away late. You know, you had your usual hijinks at the end of the game, and it ended up being a push. You know, it was a loss for some people. It was 7.5. But that was a game where I would have been better off playing South Dakota State a half unit in the first half, half unit for the game. And sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. But I think more often than not, it's going to work out if you play the dog that way.
I'll say this, and it's, you don't want generic rules of thumb, but I do like, if I like an under, I'll play the first half under, and if I like an over, I'm betting the game over. I think the fouling, given it's the last game of the season for teams, they are more willing to hack down 11 with a minute to go, whereas, like, in the regular season, they'll let that dribble out because there's more games to go. It's that desperation, you know, even down, like, 13 with 40 seconds to go, you're going to get those extra
points. No, there's no question. No question about it. That's a great point. I mean, the finality of it. Oh, we were talking about this during the Pac-12 tournament title game. Oregon's down 17, or Oregon's up 17 on Washington, and the Huskies are still fouling with 1.5 minutes to go, you know, and 1 minute to go, and even with, like, 45 seconds to go. Down 17. And Mike Hopkins just determined to play it out and not give up, which, you know, that's great. But if you bet under, you had to sweat that out. That total closed 119. That game probably should have landed at most on 105, and it landed on 116. And there was, you know, the final 30 seconds finally got dribbled out. But you're correct. These college teams will foul to the bitter end. You always have to keep that in mind if you're going to play an under.
Kind of like that Bulls-Suns second half, Matt. I know you were monitoring that one last night. I got hooked by the intentional foul, the bear hug foul with 30 seconds to go on a team that was winning. So really, really puzzling there. Made no sense. Just, I still don't even want to, because there was, I didn't have the volume on of it, but it was just a brutal, brutal. And the Bulls had no concept on how to milk a lead with 13 with 1.5 minutes to go. They're shooting with like 12 on the shot clock. It's just.
You know, I missed that one.
Yeah,
I was watching tapes of college games from the weekend, and I missed that one.
Yes, the old Suns-Bulls game in the lottery. All right, another game, trendy play is, we'll get to that one. Let's do Vermont-Florida State. I know the Westgate has taken some sharp money on the dog here.
Yeah, and I'm going to play Vermont as well. Anthony Lamb is a legit go-to scorer, and I always feel like that's important in tournament play. You got to have somebody you can go to when you need a bucket. And Lamb is that kind of guy. He's a 6'6 forward. He's physical, the top player in the America East, averages 21.5 points, 8 rebounds, shoots 37% from three. Catamounts 12-1 since late January, so this team knows how to win. They didn't luck their way into the tournament. What you're going to hear from a lot of people making a case for Florida State is that's a far more athletic and talented team. And, of course, that's true. But at the same time, Leonard Hamilton is a coach. I went back and looked. In six opening round games under Hamilton, Florida State's lost twice, won by more than 7 points only once. I think a lot of that is maybe the other team's a little bit better prepared. And, you know, with extra time to prep, Hamilton gets out coached. I don't know, you can draw your own conclusions there. But what I like is this game is also in Hartford, Connecticut. You were talking about, you know, the fans always root for the underdog in these type of games. I got to think the Catamounts are going to have about 90% of the fans in attendance rooting for them at +10.5. I think the dog is a play. And, you know, you're going to hear this a lot, too, that, you know, that's a trendy dog or that's a public dog. Well, you can't be too afraid of all those. Some of these dogs are going to come through, some aren't. In the NFL, yes, I hate to be on public dogs. But in these cases where I'm handicapping these games, if I like the dog, I'm not going to, you know, be afraid of it just because it becomes a little bit too trendy of a pick.
Yeah, I got you there. But I got to look at the stat. But, like, any game involving Leonard Hamilton, the underdog covers. It's like 10-2 or something ridiculous. So if he's the dog, he's great. But if he's the favorite, it's not good for him. Yale,
well,
LSU.
He was the dart against Duke over the weekend. He didn't cover in that game. And actually, Florida State played well.
Yeah, they
hung with Duke for a long time in that game, but still didn't get the cover. Yeah,
it was a late pull away. All right, another trendy dog is an actual bulldog, Yale, against the LSU.
Yeah, I was told yesterday that Dan Dockich was talking up Yale. I obviously respect Dockich's opinion on everything. I think this game sets up similar to Vermont-Florida State. No doubt the LSU side is much more talented. But there's also a coaching issue here with Will Wade and his suspension. That is a negative. That's a big storm cloud hanging over the Tigers. Tony Benford is the interim coach, and I feel like this guy's a dead bet against. He was fired by North Texas 2 years ago after an 8-22 season. I think he's in over his head. I would not put this guy in charge of a Taco Bell drive-thru, and he's trying to run LSU in the most important games of the season. Yale, not the typical Ivy League team. You know, public perception is these teams are, you know, half-court offensive teams, slow it down. The Bulldogs aren't like that. They score 80.6 points a game. Mie Onye is a 6'6 guard, 17 points, six rebounds, shoots 39% from three. I think Coach K said early in the season that he's going to be a first-round pick. So you've got a Bulldogs team that can shoot it. They like to run. They have an NBA prospect. Yes, it's a trendy upset pick here too, but I'm willing to bet against Louisiana State. I went in the tournament thinking I'm going to fade probably, I think, at four teams I had written down. Purdue, LSU, Nevada, and K-State. And I took eight with Yale when this line opened. I'm also going to play the first half. A plus 4.5, and this is another game, Doug, where I think all the fans there are going to pull for Yale to beat LSU. The game is in Jacksonville.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that with recent tournament runs from the Ivy League, including Yale. You mentioned you want to fade Nevada. Well, you got them against Florida.
Yeah, and I like Eric Musselman a lot, but I've said this many times. It's probably one of the trickiest things for any coach to figure out how to control when his team peaks, and I'm not sure you really can. Coach Calip. John Calipari does a great job of that. Coach Cal tends to get his teams a peak in March. I don't know what his magic formula is, but obviously that's the ideal time you want a team to peak. I think Nevada is a team I watch closely out here on the West Coast a lot. I bet against this team a lot in the first half, especially. It's a very slow-starting team. This trend goes back to last season. Even people who don't watch Nevada probably recall the Wolfpack had to make big comebacks to be Texas and Cincinnati in the tournament last year. Well, that was the norm for Nevada, having to make big comebacks, sweeping through the first half, and I could probably see that happening again. So I'm going to play this plus one in the first half, plus 2.5 for the game on Florida. Nevada 1-7 against the spread in the past eight. I really think the Wolfpack are limping to the finish line. They lost in the Mountain West tournament over the weekend. Jordan Caroline, top rebounder, number two scorer, has an Achilles injury. He sat out the loss to San Diego State in the tournament. Musselman wanted to get him ready for the NCAAs this week. Well, an Achilles injury is not going to heal in a week, so that's a little bit of a red flag there. Plus, this is not a team that shoots exceptionally well from three. They don't have a true point guard. You watch them offensively, and they just seem out of sorts most times. They do have athletes. They do have size. That's a big positive for Nevada. Florida, on the other hand, not really anything special about the Gators. Keybon Allen's a heck of a player, but he's the only double-digit scorer that the Gators have. I do think Mike White is a really good coach. I know from what I've read that a lot of Florida fans are down on Mike White, and they want a coaching change. I think that's absurd. This guy will get it done. Florida 2-1 against LSU this season, so the potential is there. Like I said, go with the Gators, split a unit, first half, end the game. Nevada's a team you have to play against in the first half.
They've been that bad all year. You wonder if it's just they got bored with the conference season, and I don't think they're capable of having that on-off switch, but there was talk this team would go undefeated, potentially, when the preseason, but they have just had a wonky year that hasn't lived up to that.
Go back to the game Nevada played against Arizona State in Los Angeles in December, I think it was, and Arizona State was up big in the first half in that game, and Nevada was just completely listless and no energy. And that's, I've seen that from this team way too many times in the first half of the games. Like I said, it goes back to last season. And, you know, when you see a trend like that, and I bet it consistently, I got to play it again here.
Yeah, I don't blame you at all. What about this zone game with Syracuse and Baylor?
Yeah, very interesting matchup. I'm going Syracuse here, -2. And I think this line's going to close 3 or 3.5. Tyus Battle is going to play for the Orange. He missed the 2 ACC tournament games last week with a sore back, 17 points a game. Obviously, they need him out there. This team doesn't have an abundance of offensive options. But with Battle on the floor, I think Syracuse is a pretty good offensive team. Injury news for Baylor, also positive. Mekhi Mason, he scores 14-6 a game, shoots 36.5% from 3. He's really important to this Baylor offense. Well, it looks like he's going to come back and play in this tournament game. The Bears went through a 4-game losing streak without Mason. They've had some other injuries. They've really been injury-riddled. Baylor 1-5, past 6 games away from Waco. You see Syracuse make March runs, and I think that 2-3 zone defense has a lot to do with it. Very few teams can run an effective offense against the zone. That's why Mekhi Mason's going to be really important for Baylor in this game. All that aside, I just think Syracuse is a better team. With Battle back, I'll lay 2 here. And, Doug, I do think this line's going to close 3 or 3.5.
I'm glad you brought up Battle. So much news on the ACC Conference Tournament on the injury front was around Zion Williamson. But Syracuse losing their leading scorer, and I believe 6th leading scorer in the conference, if I remember correctly, was obviously a big blow to the Orange. There. Let's go to Friday with Colgate in Tennessee. Another ugly dog here.
Yeah, that's kind of a theme, huh? I am going with Colgate getting a big number here, and this is another one I'm going to split the unit +10.5 in the first half, +18 for the game, and those numbers aren't available out there now. You know, you watch Tennessee over the weekend, I really felt like that was their Super Bowl against Kentucky, and I think anybody who came back and bet the Vols in the championship game was crazy on Sunday because of all the emotion and everything that went into that game against Kentucky and the comeback. I bet Kentucky in that game, and I was sick to my stomach because Cats had an 8-point lead with about 2:45 to go, and John Calipari is going to win that game 85-90% of the time. And it's just kind of a fluke occurrence that Kentucky blew that lead. I tell you what, the officiating was garbage down the stretch, but that's another story. I think Tennessee got humbled in that game. I don't necessarily think it means they're going to come back fired up and extra motivated for this game. There could be a hangover effect from that loss to Kentucky. Colgate's a pretty good team, man. This is a team of size and shooters. An 11-game win streak, I think they can hang tough with Tennessee. Doug, what I doubt is, can they hang tough for 40 minutes? And that's why I said I'm going to split this and play first half in game. But you got 2 forwards for Colgate. Ropolis Ivanauskas, he's 6'10". Will Raymond, 6'8". Those guys each shoot better than 43% from 3. Eventually, Grant Williams, Admiral Schofield, those guys are going to impose their will and probably take over this game. But I think Colgate can hang in, and I think these numbers are a little bit too big.
All right, another game on Friday, Washington and Utah State. Obviously, the Aggies play in Mountain West Country where you live.
Yeah, Bill Walton, I thought, said it best when he was calling the Pac-12 tournament title game on ESPN over the weekend. The Huskies look like dogs wandering aimlessly in the desert. I mean, that's been the case for the Huskies since they clinched the Pac-12. I think they clinched the league title a little too soon, lost their edge. They're 1-6 against the spread in the past 7. This is still a talented team. Matisse Thybul is, Walton compared him to Scottie Pippen. He's a defensive menace. I like that comparison a lot. The Pac-12 Mountain West, each week conferences this season. Utah State's got 2 big-time players. Who would be big-time players in the Pac-12? Sam Merrill, a sharpshooter. He's really a good all-around player. And 6'11 freshman Nemus Kata, who is going to play in the NBA, Doug. Merrill averages 21-2 a game, shoots 38% from 3. He's always at the top of the scouting reports. Thybul is going to shadow Merrill. This Washington team plays a 2-3 zone. Mike Hopkins is a Boeheim disciple. My numbers favor the Pac-12 champs by a point here. I think there's a value in the number. I actually, when this opens Sunday night, I took Washington +3.5. I'm hoping the Huskies can get it together and show up. And I think they will. All that aside, there is value in +3.5, I believe.
Oregon-Wisconsin line was just fascinating. Whiskey opened -3, went bet all the way to the other side, Oregon -1. Now the Badgers are favored. And I'm a little scared with the Ducks here because I know the numbers guys like Whiskey by like 4 or 5. So that concerns me, but I still think the Ducks are playing great with 8 straight up and against the spread.
Yeah, you know why the numbers guys like the Ducks or like the Badgers is because Ken Pomeroy has Wisconsin as a top 20 team and Oregon's way down the list. And basically, a lot of these games get bet according to the Pomeroy rankings. Oregon's not the same team. As Oregon's rating should be much higher than what appears on that chart. Dana Altman made a switch. He went to a big lineup. He's got basically 4 guys out there, 6'8", 6'9", with point guard Peyton Pritchard, one of the best college point guards I've seen in a while. This guy just can control a game. Ducks are 8-0 straight up in ATS in their past 8. They've allowed 54 points or fewer in 6 of the past 8. Their defensive length is going to bother Ethan Happ. Basically, does everything for the Badgers. He's like a point forward. Wisconsin, #3 in adjusted defensive efficiency on Ken Pom. Like I said, rate much better than Oregon. I'm going to toss some of those numbers out because Wisconsin not playing well at the end of the season. The Ducks are red hot. I'm going to trust the hot team with the better coach and the better point guard. I took the Ducks +1.5. I tried to get the 3. It disappeared before I got there, but I'll take the 1.5. This game also in San Jose, which I think was a slight advantage to Oregon.
Yeah, Pac-12 constantly dismissed. Get this stat. Over the last decade, the Pac-12 is the best record of any conference when they are the lower-seeded team. So here they're obviously the 12. So when they are, quote-unquote, the worst team, the Pac-12 over the last decade is 9-2. So certainly a dismissed conference. Now, they weren't great this year. I get it. But Oregon is not your typical 12 seed. I think I like them as well. And I think just the athleticism and height.
That's an interesting trend. I hope that holds up. And I will say, once again, this is one of those games where I think the analytics, I got to toss them out the window because Oregon was not a very good team for 2.5, 3 months. Oregon's been a totally different team here in the past month. I think the Badgers are fading here late in the season.
All right, I'm up against the clock. One last game, UC Irvine, and the fourth team you said you're going to look to fade this tournament, K-State.
Yeah, K-State's just a totally different team without Dean Wade. He's a do-it-all guy for the Wildcats. He's doubtful of play. From what I've heard, he's probably not going to play in this tournament at all if K-State advances. The Anteaters, they won their 3 Big West tournament games by a total of 55 points. This is a team that's won 30 games, has not lost since January 16th. They defend. They rebound. It's a well-rounded team. I took 6 when this opened with UC Irvine, and I think this game has a pretty good shot to see an outright upset. So UC Irvine's a play I like a lot.
Matt, really appreciate the time, man. Great stuff. You're doing awesome stuff over at VSiN as well, and we appreciate also the appearances on Daily Wager.
Hey, anytime. You bet. Thanks.
All right, bud. Have a good one. All right, special thanks to Matt Eumanns and John Murray, both guys. Waking up early, accommodating the busy schedule we had. We even are taping this close after like a 20-minute break because I had to go run and do outside the lines.
Busy
so,
man.
So everyone helping out. Kai, appreciate it to you as well. We got to give the people what they want, as they say, right?
That's right.
And so that's a lengthy pod breaking down all these games with March Madness. So you have not filled out your bracket. Is that what you're telling me?
After I get lunch, I'm going to my desk, and I'm going to dedicate the next couple of hours
to the lab. You're going to get involved in the lab.
That's right.
Yeah, I usually like to absorb as much information as possible. Then about Wednesday morning, roll up the sleeves and do it. So obviously it's easier for me just being surrounded by all this as for you too. Like you know, it's not like we're lawyers and doctors, whatever, and like a desk job with like piling up work.
God forbid.
Where we have to like go research a bunch of stuff. Like we are already immersed in the space where we are. Gleaning wisdom, if you will. Have you ever won a pool? Murray and I talked about winning. Have you ever won?
Never won. I've come pretty close, but I've never won. Right. It's like I get all the way to like the Sweet 16 or the Final Four, and then it's like all hell breaks loose.
Well, let's change that. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. All right. Thanks to John Murray, Superbook director and odds maker at the Westgate. I mentioned Superbook in Las Vegas. And then also Matt Eumanns from Vegas Stats and Information Network does a great job out there on radio. And they are expanding their product as well. They're on Nesson now in the mornings. Mitch and Polly, Mitch Moss has been on the show before. Both buddies of mine from out there. So they'll be on Nesson broadcast pretty soon in the morning. So, look, it's growing. We're in 8 states now. Obviously, with Daily Wager out there, we encourage everyone to go watch. That is 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN News and the ESPN app. We're always available on the website, ESPN.com, chalk section, and also on the app and video on demand. So go check that out. And we're having a lot of fun, and we're growing, and you know, we'll see where this all goes. But hopefully we got to keep handing out winners. That's the key.
Enjoy the ride, man.
Thank you. I'm trying to. All right. Thanks to everyone for their loyal listenership as well, subscribing, rating, reviewing, downloading, all that fun stuff. And we'll catch you back here next week, where we will break down Sweet 16 games, and we'll try to do this Tuesday as well. All right, thanks to everyone for the lengthy pod, the patience demonstrated, and hopefully we have some winners.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.